Hey everyone, welcome back to Hysteria Radio. It's your host Joe Fusaro here, and today, as always, we're talking about music, arts, mental health, anything related to health and overcoming adversity. Today, I actually have a guest who was my first guest on Hysteria Radio. She is a nurse. She is an entrepreneur. She's the founder and CEO of Scandic Health, which I actually use their product, MusiCure. We're going to do a double plug here. I used MusiCure on my newest book, Meanwhile on Earth. You have to check it out. It's on Amazon. And what I did was I noticed at the beginning of all my books, I rant and rave for a little bit while about everything that's been bothering me the past few months, because unlike the usual writers that say that you have to write every day, I guess that I am the part-time, full-time writer where I'll take breaks for long periods of time in order to try and rest my head, meditate, get grounded. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, everything that I didn't think was bothering me that was bothering me over the last few months will all spill out on the paper. And I noticed that around page 10 of the book that I needed something to calm down, slow down, refocus, and I remembered that I had MusiCure on my computer. So I signed in, I pulled it up, and I think that you'll all notice a change after around page 10 of my book where I find some peace and calm. And I highly recommend checking out scandichealth.com if you need some peace and calm at work. So without further ado, let me introduce Ann Taylor. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Joe. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, welcome back. I love having you on the show. It was a great first show. It was one of my most watched shows, was episode one. And, you know, a few weeks ago, I was thinking about, you know, our need to be on the phone, our need to be on the computer. And, you know, this has been like a theme for me over the last few years. And it's like, well, I need to be on for the things I do. Obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, you realize that, you know, I'm on the phone. So I'm not going to stand up here and say that we don't need phones or we need to get rid of electronics, but we really need to find some kind of balance right now, because I find that people are really absorbed into the phone. Where I was at a concert last Saturday, and, you know, I noticed people were on their phone there. And then whenever I get home from a show, I'll go to the Instagram of the venue that I was at just to see who posted what pictures and there's any good shots. And somebody from the balcony posted a picture down below in the orchestra, and every single person in the crowd was looking at their phone, and no one was having a conversation. No one was talking. No one was dancing to the opening artist. And I just thought, you know, I was on break from anything social for around 5 to 10 years during my whole healing and recovery and learning to manage my symptoms process. And I couldn't help but to think, like, what did I miss in the last 5 or 10 years that, like, people aren't talking to people anymore?
Yeah, you know, you're preaching to the choir, Joe. I have two teenagers that have mental health challenges, so we definitely also have a challenge with the phone. It's something about finding a middle road, because just as much as you said you use the computer, my company, I'm on the computer all the time. And when I'm away from the computer, I have access to my email on my phone, and I find myself checking it constantly. And so what happens when you are a parent is that your kids, they copy you, they feed off my energy, and they copy everything that I do. And they live through, their teenage world is through their phone.
Yeah.
That's how they communicate with their friends. That's what they see, what's going on. So it's definitely a constant struggle in our family too. It's something that it's like a work in progress. I should probably be better at, like, sometimes taking the phone away from them. The thing that I do a lot is that we talk about the dependency on the phone. And I think awareness is always a very good first step. And I, from those talks, I see often that they will leave their phone sometimes in, on the weekends in their room, and they'll come downstairs and they'll do some art, or we'll watch a movie together, or we'll go outside or do something else. And then after a couple of hours, I'll say, so how do you feel? Because I noticed that you haven't been on your phone for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And every single time they'll say, oh, it's so nice.
Yeah.
Because they feel the social pressure that the second you get a text, the second you see somebody sending a Snapchat, you have to answer back right away. It's an instant reply that's needed. So their brain never has the time to sit and relax and find that calmness that you were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you're constantly on, it just elevates your senses. And I think you, without being aware of it, you ignore so many other beautiful things in life that otherwise could enhance your life. They don't, you can't focus on hearing the birds. You can't focus on enjoying the food that you're eating. You can't focus on how are you feeling right now? I don't know how I'm feeling because I'm constantly having to answer all these Snapchats or text messages that I'm getting. And if I don't, then my friends will think X, Y, and Z about me.
Right. And it's like, why do we need to know all these things? Like, why, when you see a commercial, why do you need to know exactly what that product does if you don't even need that product? Like, why are you Googling, and why are you, you know, and it really desensitizes you to like reality. And you start mm-hmm. thinking that you need to know everything rather than to just feel the present moment and feel life. You know, and feel happiness and feel love, and everybody's looking for it in these quick, like, I think I read a study that when you go on to social media and you're one of those people that like check for likes, and we've all done it, right? You
mm-hmm.
make a post and then you're like, all right, I'll let it sit. And then 15 minutes later, you're like, let me see if somebody liked it. And then, you know, 20 minutes after that, you're like, oh, like three more people liked it. And when you're doing that, it's actually releasing dopamine and serotonin in your head. And they say, actually read a study where it's the same amount of the chemical coming out of your brain as if you took a hit of cocaine.
Yeah.
So, and it's like, we have these studies that tell us, you know, to back off of it, but the internet companies are getting away with like this, the shock ads and shock media and everything. You know, you have to look more, you have to come back. And I guess the question is, at this point, we're all on it, right? Like you and I are on the
mm-hmm,
computer talking
mm-hmm.
right now. How do we find that balance? How do we, you know, show people that they don't need to compare themselves and they don't need to know everything, and that it's okay to just be where you are and feel life and enjoy life?
I think you just made a really good point there when you talked about the research that's proven that every time you get a positive response back on your social media, your brain just starts to produce more serotonin, and comparing it to cocaine. Now, imagine if you, when we talk about addiction to food, addiction to quote, to drugs or to alcohol, any kind of addiction, people go into rehab for that. It's something that we have to focus on. So we have to do the same with electronics, because we are talking about the health of, for me, it's the health of my children and the health of myself too. So it's something about, like I said, I think the awareness is the first step, and then creating times throughout your day, whether it's small oases of starting with 10 minutes away from your phone and then moving up to 20 and then 30, and trying to make that a habit. And just as with anything, if you make that a habit, after 5 to 7 days, you will start to notice other things around you instead of just being on the phone.
Yeah. Yeah. And something I started doing a few years ago when I started going for walks every day is I'll put, you know, 'cause I need it for music, obviously, but I found myself on walks, I'm checking emails, I'm getting
yeah.
texts, I'm getting phone calls, and it's ruining that 1 hour that I was giving to myself every day. So now I put the silent, I put it in silent mode or airplane mode when I go for a walk now, because I just, you need to give yourself time away from all the alerts and all the rings and everything, or else you're just living your life for other people at that point.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? I mean, the inner creates the outer. So if you start to turn off your phone and start to have these moments or hours where you're really finding some inner peace, you will automatically want to go back to that place again. So when you're back into the stressful world, your body and your mind will remember how good it felt. So you'll actually be addicted opposite.
Yeah, that's right. And so I guess it really just starts with like one or two small changes rather than just saying like, I'm going to get off the phone forever, because it's like you said, it's like a drug. Like, yeah, people quit cold turkey, but then 2 weeks later, they're like, I can't take it anymore. And then they go back even harder. So yeah, and it's the same with the computer, or the phone.
Yeah, and everything has to come in small steps. You know, you can't make a major change. The challenge that that I have in my family is that we have mental health challenges mixed in with the regular teenage addiction to electronics. And so for me, I make a big point out of asking, how do you feel right now? How does that feel to be without your phone? Or I see that you have been knitting for an hour and you look very calm. How do you feel on the inside? And very often when my kids start to put words to their feelings and they are verbalizing how they actually feel, I can see the recognition happening in their head.
Yeah.
And I do it on purpose because I want them to be aware. How do you feel? And how do you feel when you're without your phone? And when you are verbalizing out loud into the universe, I actually feel good. I feel less stressed. And I know that my friends are going to keep texting me and keep Snapchatting me, but the phone is not next to me right now, so I really physically can't answer. And now I actually feel good. The inner part of me is calm, so they're able to bring that with them throughout the rest of the day. And it's just something that I try to do it, not every day, but I really try to make it a habit to have these conversations. And it helps me too, because then I really start to be aware of, I have to put the phone down, or I have to put the phone in another room where I'm at. And because otherwise I do the same thing. I'll see a text. Oh my, it's got to be important. I probably have to answer it right away.
Right.
And you don't have to answer it right away. And one thing that very often happens here too in my household is that the pressure of not answering your friends right away, and then you see that your friends are doing something where either you're not invited or right now you have decided to take care of your mental health instead, so now you see what you're missing out on.
Oh, man.
So when we have the challenges of where I very often say, you know what? I don't think that you need to go to this event. I feel that it's more important that you get a good night's sleep. Or I feel that right now you have to take care of your mental health. And that can be that you get a good night's sleep, that you have enough time to catch up on your homework, or you have enough time to take a nice long shower or sit and do some art or do something else where you really take care of your mental health. Just like if you had a concussion, your parents would also tell you, no, you cannot go to that football game. You need to go home and lay on the couch because you got to take care of your concussion.
Yep.
Or if you have a sprained ankle, you're going to lay with your foot elevated. It's the same with the mental health. So I make a very big deal about that. And sometimes my kids, I even let them stay home from school because sometimes you have to have a mental health day to take care of yourself. And on those days specifically, I actually confiscate the phone. I take the phone for a certain amount of hours just so they can be off.
And that's, I think I might have been one of the first people to use the mental health day at school when I was younger, because every couple months I would just get this like feeling of overwhelmment. At the time, mm-hmm. I didn't even know that, you know, I had anxiety or bipolar or ADHD or any of that. I just thought that I just didn't feel right. I would get mm-hmm. headaches. I would be like a little shaky and uneasy. And every few months I would have to take that day. And I think it's actually getting better. The pressure is easing a little bit, where I think mental health days are understood now a little bit better. I still think that there's a gap, you know, there's people that believe in mental health, and there's still a few people left, you know, a couple dinosaurs that don't believe in it. And the one thing that you just said, though, about like this fear of missing out that the kids have, and I remember that used to kill me when I was like ages 13 to like 25. If I was sitting at home and I knew that people were somewhere, it would eat at me and it would kill me. And, you know, I would get anxiety, or I would just have to, like when I was younger and if I wasn't allowed to go out, like I would sneak out or I would find a way out. But I didn't have to watch what was going on with my friends. I didn't have to watch the party on Instagram or Snapchat or Facebook or anything. And I can't even imagine growing up now and like being told like I'm grounded for 3 weeks, which used to happen every once in a while. And I couldn't imagine sitting here in my room, though. And, you know, back then I'd listen to music, I'd play my guitar, I'd go for a walk, you know, whatever. I'll get over it. Now you have to watch that party happening from your bedroom. Like, I just can't even imagine that.
No, I would love to see a survey about that, because I actually wonder if that increases the mental health crisis just for teenagers, because they all of a sudden have to constantly be able to relate to things that maybe they are not physically and mentally ready to really have to relate to. But it's being put up in their face constantly, and then they're like, "Oh my gosh, what? How do I have to deal with that?" So yeah, I'm quite concerned about that. So that's something that we as parents have to have lots of talks with our kids about. And I hope that one of the good steps, or steps in the right direction, is to have a couple of mental health days sometimes. And maybe if anybody from the school listens to this, they'll call me out, because, I mean, when I call the kids in sick, you can't call your kids in sick for a mental health day. So you have to call in for a physical ailment, because that's what is understood and accepted by the school system. But I hope to entail in my kids a pattern of remember yourself, remember to take care of yourself, take the breaks to feel how you feel. And you can't do that in 2 minutes. And if you don't want to meditate, then at least just put your phone away and do something that makes you focus a little bit on the inside of you, because you need to find a place where it's calmer. And for me, this is how we in our house use MusiCure. Like you said, when you wrote your book, it is that calm lifeline that constantly flows through our household. So I hope they will bring that with them out into life as they become adults. Yeah,
they definitely will. And, you know, it's funny, the other day we were talking about, you know, things that, what can we take, how can we replace a little bit of the electronics with art? And, you know, this is something, I mean, when I got out of the hospital in 2010 or 2011, I took a 2-year break from the internet, period. I deleted all my accounts. I was like, forget it. I do not need to be on the phone or the internet. I don't even think I had a cell phone for like a year of that. And then at some point, somebody in my family was just like, all right, like, this is ridiculous. Like, it's like, you know, it's like 2012 or 2013. They're like, we can't find you. We can find everybody else. So I ended up getting like a little BlackBerry that didn't even have a color screen or anything like that. And I was definitely the last of all my friends to get on the smartphone bandwagon and everything. And I really found myself in that couple years. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I mean, I also had, you know, serious mental illness. You know, people just want to call it a mental health condition or mental health issues. But I mean, I was hospitalized 10 times between a week and 45 days every time. So as far as I'm concerned, there was an illness, or maybe, mm-hmm. I didn't have a disease, but there was a disruption in the ease of my life at that point. So, you know, people can word it however they want. And that break, you know, it really it was what I needed to focus on myself and my health and my self-care, and to realize that like that was the only thing that mattered, because you're pulled in all these directions of things that other people think should matter to you. And and ultimately, like, your health and your happiness and you doing what you love every day is really the only thing that matters. You know, like, there's really nothing else after that. But then, so you and I were talking, and I'm like, but how do you tell a teenager that? How in the world? Because I work with, you know, young adults in high school and adults in college all the time. And, you know, it's easy for me. I go there for an hour. I talk to them. They're like, hey, all right, we only had to deal with him an hour. Like, he's cool. We'll ask him questions and we'll do what he says for, you know, a day or two until we forget. But as a parent, so that's where you come in.
You know,
how do you get your kids to get interested in something? Because let's be honest, none of us want to listen to our parents.
No, absolutely. And it's a very good point. So what I have come to learn throughout all these past 7 years of our family going through the peaks and the valleys of mental health challenges is that my kids, they feed directly off my energy. And I fought that quite a lot in the beginning. I definitely suffered from some kind of codependency where I thought that I could just fix everybody else's problems. And if I constantly helped my daughters and took them to their appointments and they took the medicine and went to the therapist, then they would be better and things would be better. Right. And then a shift started happening, and it was a long shift. It took many years, but I slowly started realizing that they fed off my energy. So I actually had to fix myself. And I remember right after my daughter got discharged from the hospital, I went to a bookstore because the therapist had said to me, you know, mandala drawings are very meditative and calming. And I thought, okay, I mean, I was trying everything. So, and I went into the bookstore and I said, I'm looking for these mandala drawings. And the lady showed me the different ones that they had. And I said, well, I don't know if my daughter will sit and draw in these. And she said to me so calmly, she said, well, you should start drawing in them first. And you will see that you will actually attract your daughter. They will both come and then they will draw with you.
Wow.
And I went home and I was definitely a little hesitant. And I remember sitting down and I started drawing, and slowly she came over and she sat next to me and we just sat there and colored. And you can color within the lines or outside the lines. It doesn't really matter. And the philosophy with the mandala drawings is that they are like in a circular, more like a labyrinth kind of pattern. So it is like a meditative way for your brain to sit and relax. And we sat there next to each other for, I think, the first time for like an hour, and we didn't talk, but it was so therapeutic to do something together. And of course I played music here in the background, and just, it was so nice and therapeutic for both of us to do something together, because it's very, very strenuous for your relationship as a parent to go through therapy and all the trauma of acute mental health crises. And it's imperative for the recovery process to find small islands where you can come together.
Yeah.
And it just proved to me that we could be together without necessarily having to talk, but had a positive experience together. And actually, since that day, mandala drawings keep coming up in our daily lives. It's not anything that happens on a daily basis, but we very often go back to it. And then after that, the arts definitely became a big part of our lives, anywhere from drawing to doing beads to knitting. We'd taken some clay making classes together. Again, it was, I love the arts too, so it's an easy thing for me. But even my husband, who's not big into art, sat and did the mandala drawings, because anybody can sit and color a little bit. And it's a good way to recover together, because when one person is, when one person in a family has a struggle, and it doesn't matter whether it's a mental health or a physical health, when you have some kind of illness struggle, it affects everybody in the family. So everybody has to heal. Everybody has to find some way to create some kind of harmony so the cohesiveness of the family can recover together. And then we actually did a lot of gardening together too. I have, and it's actually not until recently that I have realized the grounding effect of gardening. And it's just that I always love to be outside, and my kids would just come with me, and they never looked at it as work. And I never asked them come and help me, but they would always come up after 30 minutes and say, "Oh, what are you doing? And can I also have a shovel? And I'll also do this." And
that's all. You know what? That's something I never really hear about within the mental health community is gardening or planting. You know, no one ever really talks about that. We have like the list of things that you're supposed to do, right? Like journal, meditate, go for a walk, this, that, all 10 billion of the things. And that's one that really I feel like gets overlooked. But yeah, that definitely has a grounding effect. And just, you know, like you're creating something. I mean, it's art.
yeah. And you are outside, you're getting fresh air, you're getting your vitamin D from the sun. And so when they were younger, you know, I made sure that I had kid-sized shovels and kid-sized gloves. And then it makes it a little bit more fun. And 2 weeks ago, I did some gardening work and my youngest daughter came out. And it was so interesting. She says to me, "Oh, it's so nice." And she was helping me. And then we did some rock kerns where you put the rocks on top of each other just to kind of create some balance. And very often you see those in like meditation gardens.
Yeah.
And then she says to me, "I so remember being young and helping you." And I said, "I know. You guys were helping me so much and you would just love to." And it doesn't matter. They think that they're helping you. Maybe they're just digging holes in the soil. It doesn't matter. They're next to you. You're doing something together. You're creating something. You're outside. But it made me so happy that a 13-year-old had memories of doing this in her early childhood too. And I think that even if your teens aren't verbalizing it concretely, you are slowly showing them different patterns and different things you can do that's good for your mental health.
Yeah.
And they will copy and bring it with them into their adulthood.
And one thing I swear by in, you know, when you're trying to re-find yourself or, you know, regain control a little bit of your life is getting back to the things that you used to love to do before all like the disruption or the bad happened in your life, you know. Try and remember, as hard as it is, try and think back. You know, for me, it was, you know, going to Mets games and watching the Mets on TV every night in the summer. There was something about, you know, sitting down, pouring a glass of iced tea and just like hanging out, you know, and watching the Mets from like 7 to 10 every night. Or, you know, a band that you used to like when you were younger. Like, get back to the things that you used to love when you were a kid. And I think that's awesome with the gardening. That's amazing. That's and you're reopening like those, you know, neural pathways that they had opened as a kid that maybe the devices or, you know, a traumatic incident at school, maybe that covered up, you know, some of the good, but now you're like reopening the pathway to that good. It's unbelievable.
Absolutely. And I think it's also a lot about going inwards and feeling and being aware of how do you feel when you do this? And like you said, remembering that feeling, because you will automatically be drawn towards that again next time you have a crisis or next time you have a stressful episode. Neurologically, your body will remember when you do gardening or when you sit and listen to music or when you draw, you feel good. Okay, I'm going to go back to that because I remember that feeling good.
That's it. And what I've found is that for me, going to the concert and going to the Met game, that feels a lot better than all the things that I was doing to hurt myself, whether it was, you know, chemical addiction, whether it was, you know, just, you know, smoking or addiction to the internet or addiction to relationships, whatever things used to pull you for the wrong reasons, the things that pull you for the right reasons feel so much better. And they give you like roots and a foundation, you know, to build on gardening. Like I feel like I have strong roots and a strong foundation now from getting away from the quick fixes in my life and building like these long lasting things. Actually, not to talk about the new book, but it's funny. I was looking up like the chemicals in the brain and the dopamine, the serotonin, all the things that make you happy. But there was another chemical that stood out to me. It was called vasopressin. Mm-hmm. And vasopressin, I'm not a scientist and I'm not a nurse or a doctor, but basically vasopressin is the chemical that gets released into the body when you have like a long lasting relationship. It's like that feeling, not when a relationship is new, but like once you get comfortable with the person and you build a trust, mm-hmm. like not when you first buy the new house, but once you're settled into the new house and like you go out on the deck and you're like, wow, this is my house. Like I live here. Like this is mm-hmm. my family. It's like the relief chemical mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, we're all focused on like dopamine, serotonin, which are like quick, you know, bang, bang, bang. Like, give me this good feeling now. And it's like, maybe it's the vasopressin that I'm looking for in my life.
Oh, absolutely. You know, wouldn't we all like to have, remember that commercial, was it for Staples or where there was a red button and they pressed the red button and they got like instantaneously into the store, whatever they were ordering.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we would all like that. Imagine just going to therapy one time and it was, then it was fixed, right?
Yeah, the magic pill.
There's nothing like that. You know, it's a long road. It's a long journey. And sometimes it is one step forward and two back. But eventually you will get there, but it's a work in progress. And as you are on that walk, on that journey, in that process there, it's important to have tools with you that you can use. So you eventually, like you said, so you eventually can get that vasopressin. So you really have that feeling inside of, I am grounded and this is where I need to be. And I am grateful for all the things that I have. I mean, there's a lot of talk about saying some grateful manifestations to yourself out loud every day. And you will feel empowered by reminding yourself of the things that you actually have to be grateful for instead of just constantly wishing for quick fixes.
Yeah, yeah. And I wonder if MusiCure is a pathway to vasopressin. You know, that's, I mean, I, like I said, I'm not making any claims or anything, but it to me, it feels like, you know, something that can give you like a lasting good feeling rather than a quick good feeling. Because it's not something that I go on to and I just listen to 10 seconds of the song and I feel better, but it's something that I keep playing throughout the day. And I notice that over a long period of time, like I don't build up the same stress that I do.
No, and that's what some of the research at MusiCure that's so groundbreaking is that they did blood tests on the patients and saw that after 30 minutes of listening to MusiCure, that their cortisol level, which is your stress hormone, in the blood samples was significantly reduced. Even 30 minutes later of not listening to MusiCure, the cortisol level in the patients that had listened to MusiCure was still lower than the patients that never had listened to MusiCure. So you're right. So it's been scientifically proven that even when you stop listening to it, your stress hormone in your body is still low. And they also tested that your oxytocin, which is your like feel good hormone, some people call it your love hormone, but it's that wonderful, good harmony hormone, was elevated listening to MusiCure, and again stayed elevated after MusiCure stopped. So your thesis is very, very correct, Joe.
I mean, I not only like believe it, but like I've felt it, you know, and that's the amazing thing. It's, you know, we're kind of pressed for time at the moment, but why don't you tell us where we can find you and Scandic Health and MusiCure, because it's something, you know, I don't just have anybody on the show, and I want to make that clear. Like I wouldn't have like whatever gadget people are, you know, hooking up to people right now to use in mental health, because like I don't know anything about it, but this is something that like I believe so strongly in, because I believe more in the meditation and the art and the grounding. And yes, like, you know, you need the meds and you need the therapy, mm-hmm. you know, in most cases or in some cases, but those really just, for me, stopped the bad from happening, mm-hmm. but didn't like produce any healing effects. You know, it stopped me from getting worse, but I wasn't getting better. And it's really like the things like the meditation and the music and the writing and being able to play MusiCure. Like if I have to be on the computer, like this afternoon, I'm going to edit for a while. And, you know, I'm going to play that in the background. So that way it really like lowers my heart rate and keeps me calm, or else, you know, I get into like computer mode where I'm just clicking a ton of buttons and getting all stressed out. And, it's amazing. And I, you know, thank you for that. And, you know, I just don't want people to think that I'm just throwing random commercials onto the show, because this MusiCure works.
Thank you so much, Joe. I appreciate it so much. This is why I do what I do. I started Scandic Health after my daughter's mental health challenges and severe struggles. And I was introduced to MusiCure in 2011. And I very quickly saw that the calming that happened in my house also started happening with my patients at work. And I felt that I needed to share this with more people. So it was one of the tools that we used in her recovery, and we still to this day use, just to keep an even keel in our house. And just like you said, you use it every day, so do we. So for me, the whole platform of Scandic Health is by to promote MusiCure in North America. My goal is to see MusiCure completely being integrated into the healthcare system, to set a calming tone in all hospital departments. And I also have a service, a streaming service for single individuals like yourself, so you can access it at home. I want it to be a tool that people can bring with them wherever they go in life.
Yeah.
And I hope that my platform can be used for other parents to see the light, because I so remember being in the dark, in the scary dark that's full of stigma right when she got diagnosed. And I want to share our story and hopefully shine the light for other parents to know that there is a recovery at the end and they're not alone. And I'm so happy to hear that you use MusiCure and that it works for you. I mean, I know that it works, but for me to get this honor, Joe, to be able to talk about MusiCure and how much it's done for my family, and it means the world to me. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
You can find Scandic Health on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at Scandic Health. I'm also on Instagram for Scandic Health. And then our website is scandichealth.com.
That's awesome. I definitely recommend checking it out. It's, you know, play the video that's on the webpage. I think you'll immediately feel the calming effect. But, and once again, this is an amazing conversation. I think every 10 episodes or so, I'm going to have you back as long as you'll come on the show. And so thank you again, Anne, for Mental Health News Radio and Hysteria Radio. I'm your host, Joe Fusaro. Remember to keep the radio up to keep the hysteria down.